Hello, everybody. Welcome to the 89th episode of the Manor Podcast. I'm your co-host, Roger Bodie, joined as always with my best friend and other co-host, Michael Hamilton. Michael, you're not a you've still never seen Star Wars, right? You're not a Star Wars player. Well, I guess you're playing the new Star Wars Unlimited, but you still haven't sat down and actually like watched the movies, right?
Yeah, now that I have, I think, three-ish hours of playtime in Star Wars Unlimited, I have played much more Star Wars than I've watched Star Wars, so...
I think that means now that Austin has officially sat down and watched more Star Wars content than you have. So when I was a boy, when I was a lad, I had this little Darth Vader coin bank. And basically you could either press a button or whenever you put a little like piggy bank coin inside of it, Darth Vader would animate and light up and go poof. And do Darth Vader things and wave a lightsaber around. And my parents visited 2 weekends ago and they're like, here, have your old Darth Vader piggy bank. It's like covered in dust and stuff like that. So I like clean it off and put batteries in it. And Austin watches it go off and he is now obsessed with Darth Vader. He's like, where did, if it's not around, he's like, where did Vader go? Where did Vader go? I want Vader. And he just non-stop Vader. So I sat down with him after putting Vader away. I was like, let's watch some Vader. And I just turned on like a Darth Vader snippet series of it, which I don't know how good it was because Darth Vader did kill some people, but you know, at least it's like Star Wars killing people where like they just fly off the screen or something like that. You know, it's very PG dying.
Okay. I'm not familiar with Star Wars deaths, as you know.
Yeah, like there's no like blood or gore or anything like that. It's just like, I think the goriest thing that I remember in Star Wars maybe was like Darth Maul in episode one getting chopped to like, episode three, you actually see Anakin like lit on fire and like burning alive. I think that's the goriest one, but we didn't watch that.
Jeez. No spoiler warnings or anything. On this 30-year-old movie.
Older than 30 at this point. I mean, you knew...
Three's older than... Or episode three.
Well, you know what happened to Anakin all the way in like the 1980s Empire Strikes Back or whatever. You learned that Darth Vader was Anakin Skywalker and stuff, so...
Okay.
So we're doing a Star Wars Unlimited episode.
I'm really not
now.
Watching it. Oh, yeah, for sure. I like, I don't even remember her name. The one that taps to gain a life.
I've played two games of that game. I have no idea. And it was a draft, so it wasn't even, like, constructed or anything.
Yeah. No, we're not talking about Star Wars Unlimited.
Fair enough. What are we going to talk about today, then?
We're going to talk about equipment in Flesh and Blood.
Okay. What kind of equipment?
After we shout out the Realm Games, our sponsor.
Yeah, the Realm Games, our sponsor. We're very used to doing this by now and have a total script that we're going to read off of right now. There's no script. This is very free form. They're basically just like letting us vibe it out at this point in time. And that definitely works because Michael and I are very much vibe kind of guys. So,
I definitely expected you to start reading something that you had typed up because I know you were typing some notes before we started recording. And I was like, oh, that was what he was typing up.
No, I was typing out like what we're going to talk about. I was looking up that the Realm Games is also having a brawl in New Jersey on July 20th coming up. It is going to be class constructed and it's going to be all kinds of great, amazing ways to qualify for their 50K at the end of the year. So that tickets are available for purchase April 15th. So come on, everybody, come to New Jersey and let's go brawl.
Ooh, you're a natural at ad reads. That's not even a read.
This is all off the top of the dome. I did read the date off the screen. But that's about all I did.
That is an important one to get right. You probably don't want to just guesstimate that one. Yeah,
it's happening sometime. Just show up to New Jersey sometime in July and find a way to compete in this brawl event. That's probably the best way to handle it, I would think.
Okay.
So thank you, Realm Games, for sponsoring this episode and making content like this possible in the Flesh and Blood community.
Yeah. Okay. Ready to move on to equipment?
So equipment, yeah. Mm-hmm.
Okay, well, where were we?
It's a type of card in Flesh and Blood, I would assume.
Oh, yes. So, equipment. You get 4 slots for equipment in the game of Flesh and Blood. You get your hat, your chest, your gloves, and your shoes.
Offhand.
And believe it or not.
Offhand.
No one uses offhands or clippers. Those aren't real. We don't talk about them.
Stalagmite. Okay, Rampart.
Stalagmite's rotated for now until it rotates back in when they give us another
steel ice guard. Braid buckler.
Yeah. Okay. Anyway, so there's a couple more slots, I guess, sometimes, depending on your hero. But anyway, believe it or not, equipment is very important for what heroes are good and bad, and also they significantly affect how your heroes play.
True. So what piece of equipment do you want to talk about first? The most controversial one lately, the Scapskin Leathers?
I was going to kind of break it down into categories, but if you want to just jump into Scapskin Leathers, I love Scapskin Leathers.
Okay, well, what category would you put Scapskin Leathers in then?
So I think there's like equipment that is mainly used for its block value, and then there's equipment that is like, it's like utility that just like does something to like generate value or use it to generate value. And I think Scapskins, it's primarily used for its block value, and you probably wouldn't play it if it didn't block. And you probably would still play it if it didn't have this ability, but it still blocked 2-1. But I would say the ability is very impactful.
True. So it's somewhere. Extra action points are good.
Yeah. So it's somewhere between just a blocking fringe piece of equipment and an equipment that has utility on it.
Yeah. And I guess at a high level, real quick, we'll just go over what the different pieces of equipment are supposed to represent. So head pieces are card manipulation, like drawing cards, arsenal manipulation, things like that. Chest pieces are usually for resource manipulation. So find all spring tunic, making resources, but then you also have cards like deep blue or flame scale furnace that generate resources through other ways. Arm pieces are usually for power or damage manipulation. So you have things that usually just buff power or things that could even generate rune chant damage, like Grasp of the Arcanite or Metacarpus nodes, also pushing arcane damage. So that's usually what those that slot represents. And then shoes are usually action point manipulation. So usually going fast and getting you some kind of extra action points that way. So that's why Scapskin Leathers in their extra action point generation through the dice rolling is slotted into the foot or shoe slot of the game.
Yeah, sometimes they make you go real fast. Sometimes they make you trip and fall.
Sometimes you go get real sleepy brute.
No, that's a different thing. That's when you get your arm back when Azalea sleep darts you.
Okay, fair enough.
So I guess I talked a lot about Scapskins in the episode that we talked about our decks for the Pro Tour that didn't actually air, but I will re-talk about Scapskin Leathers. I think it's an equipment that is very frequently misevaluated. There's a lot of spots in the game where there was actually a good Twitter thread about this. I think
Tark.
Tark Patel posted about it. And it all started when James White said you shouldn't be rolling Scapskins or something. I don't remember exactly what the tweet was, but it was something like that.
They're usually activated too much in a game of Flesh and Blood, I think.
Yeah, which I strongly disagree with. I think they're usually activated too little. And I think I posted that in the thread. But anyway, Tark Patel did a really good write-up that if you want to dive deeper into this after I kind of like summarize it and say my little spiel, you should go look up his post on Twitter. But basically, every time you activate Scapskins, beforehand you should be doing an EV calculation where you're deciding how much value
EV stands for expected value.
Yes, where you're seeing how much value you will get on the turn if you roll one versus if you roll 2 or 3, which 2 or 3 is almost always the same as not rolling. I don't really know a situation where it would be different than not rolling. Maybe your opponent has gambler's gloves and they might try to force you to reroll into a 1 or something, but essentially it's the same as not rolling. And then the value that you'll get for a 4 or 5, and then the value you'll get for a 6 And a lot of the times 4, 5, and 6 are all going to be the same, but sometimes the third action point you can actually make use of. And you want to take all these values and basically take what the expected value is by averaging them. So if you roll 1, what's the value of your turn? Probably 0. Or I guess whatever you value arsenaling your card. Maybe you're arsenaling like a red bear thing, so that's probably worth something to arsenal that. Or maybe you have a windup that you can discard if you roll a 0. So you should factor that. If you roll 0 and you have a windup, you're not actually getting 0 value out of your whole hand. You're getting 2 or whatever. If you roll a 4 or 5, you can figure out the value that your hand will get with the extra action point. If you roll a 6, then you can do that. And then you add it all up and then you divide by 6. And that's the expected value in terms of like value in the game. But there's also spots in the game where potentially you are 100% to win the game if you just have 1 action point this turn. And if that's the case, you shouldn't roll shoes because you introduce a chance of losing the game when you're 100% to win. Or there's also the alternative where if you don't have 2 action points, you can never win the game. Maybe Prism's Arclight Sentinel looping you with the Angel of Rebirth, where basically if you never get a second action point, you're never going to break out of the loop and you're going to lose. So even if numbers wise, it is not correct to roll in terms of just raw value, you should still roll because it's your only way of winning the game. And this is kind of what Tarek's post tweet talks about, is that you should be looking at it in terms of EV or expected chance of winning the game based on each outcome, which I think for most of the game, just the raw value that you'll get from the cards is an accurate representation of that. But towards the end of the game where you know you're like strongly advantaged or strongly disadvantaged, or you're in really weird board states where if you roll 1, you could be in weird amount of trouble, or it could just not be that bad for you because your opponent's really bad at using 5-card hands. And if you roll 1, then you just give them a 5-card hand. For example, I played against Great Axe Sterinthia at the Pro Tour, and I was rolling Scabskins almost every turn because the penalty of rolling a 1, it's not that big. And I did roll 1 that game. They pitched 3 cards, attacked me with a Great Axe, and put a Sigil. So they got 7 points of value out of their hand when I rolled a 1, which didn't really matter. So I think that's basically it for Scavskins, though you should also be doing these calculations before you make blocking decisions, where maybe you could just block for 3 value with the card, and that should be added into, or that should be part of the calculation for if you shouldn't roll Scavskins, you just block with your extra cards and just get value from them like that, like guaranteed value.
My eyes are glazing over at this point. It's so much math. It's like the mathiest math that's ever been mathed on the podcast so far, or in a very long time.
Yeah, well, I did a lot of KO testing before the Pro Tour, and then proceeded to make a lot of mistakes with the Pro Tour, not do very well, but I thought about Scabskins a lot.
Yeah, so if I'm going to sit down at a table and do a bunch of math in my head in EV calculations, I'm going to go play poker, because the expected value of me going and doing well at a poker table if I do these calculations and know things is way higher than if I sit down at a flesh and blood table and do a bunch of expected value calculations. And spoiler alert, I don't like sitting down at a table and doing a bunch of expected value calculations. I like sitting down at a table and having fun, which maybe to some people that is, but it's not to me. And
I was going to say, I've seen you play poker. There's no EV calculations going on there.
Yeah, I played some poker after Nationals, and there were very little EV calculations at that table as well. But it was a grand old time, let me tell you. So yeah, you just got to play with your heart, you know. A good poker player, true poker players, play with their heart, not their mind.
Yeah, trust in the heart of the card, something, something. Mm-hmm,
mm-hmm. Yugi Moto taught me all he needed to know about card games when I was 8, so thank you very much.
Yeah, I wonder if that's why I appear to be so lucky. I'm not actually lucky. I'm just taking the things that the bad outcomes are less bad and the good outcomes are more good. So like it just appears that I'm luckier.
Could be. Maybe that's why I appear so much unluckier, because I'm just doing the things that it's so much more likely to not happen.
You're just taking the bad gambles, you know?
Yeah, I can't believe I didn't hit my straight flush on the river, Michael. What are the odds? Don't tell me the odds. But what are the odds?
about 46 out of 47 or something, 45 out of 46, something like that.
No. It's 50-50. Either it happens or it doesn't.
Yeah.
I lost a coin flip.
That's how math works. Anytime you don't win the lottery, you lost your coin flip. Very unlucky.
I'm the world's unluckiest person ever, I think, at this point. So, oh well. So, yeah, I like Skeptic and Leathers. I like what they do for the game. I like that there is some variance that's built into the card inherently. But ultimately, good players like Michael Hamilton can sit down at a table and to do a bunch of math and still get more value out of them than somebody who's just wee for fun rolling them, like me when I play Skeptic and Leathers. So, yeah, it seems like a sweet card, and I'm glad it exists. I think maybe the thing that might push it too far is the fact that it does block so well, the three block, but you know, it was a Welcome to Wraith card. They didn't know about blocking back then.
Wow. Shots fired. I do agree that Skapskins is like a very skill testing card, and like the way that better players utilize it will be like higher value than, I guess, like other people that are rolling in spots they shouldn't or not rolling in spots they should. I don't love the design of the card. I think that card games intrinsically have enough variance in them that you don't need to just add dice rolling mechanics to it too, but that's okay. That's the direction that I think that's like something that I personally would have preferred, but I want the game to be in the best spot it is. And if that's the direction it's got to go, that's the direction it's got to go, you know?
So any other thoughts before we move off of Skeps and Leathers then?
I probably won't dive that deep into any of the other equipment. Skapskins Leathers is the one that I've been playing a lot of attention to. But if we do talk about Scowling Fleshbag, that one might get a little rant too.
we can do that one. But first, but let's start with a different hat, though. I'm gonna spring this on you. I think completely out of the blue because it just popped into my head. And somebody, I think it was Michael Jacuzzer. Posted armor or equipment tier list a while ago, and he said Good Time Chapeau was like an A tier per piece of like class constructed equipment. Why?
Well, I think that Balance of Justice and Crown of Providence are also probably A tier, so it's got some stiff competition. But the fact that you have a three block hat that's getting like recursive value, this is converting a gold into potentially three tokens, and those three tokens, right? You get a Might of Vigor, and is it just a Might of Vigor? It's just two tokens.
Yeah, it's two tokens.
But it also turns on your Betsy ability on demand. I think the equipment is quite powerful. You have to have
But the gold. Betsy ability sucks.
Does it?
It's turning two Did you really just ask me that? Didn't we rant on this podcast for 2 years that the Bravo ability sucks and Betsy's ability is just strictly worse?
I don't think it's strictly worse. Getting one power makes it a lot better. That's like, I think two resources on average are worth two value, maybe a little bit more in class constructed, but like getting, that's like if your two resources are normally converting into zero damage versus converting into one damage, that's like an infinite percent increase, right? But it's another way to look at it is grasp of the Arknight. What's the grasp that taps two or
costs two? Grasp of the Arknight. Yeah.
Yeah. Grasp of the Arknight. You can spend two extra resources to get one damage, which, while it's a bad rate, it is nice to have that option. And I would say Betsy's hero power is probably better than that split damage. A lot of the time, the overpower is worth something. Not all the time, but it's definitely weak compared to most of the hero powers in the game. But I think it's probably on par or better than Bravo's.
That's wild. That's really wild to me that you would say that. I guess it's also just because I think overpower is just such a bad keyword ability.
Yeah, it feels like it's really designed for limited where these block cards are prevalent. And I think that's similar to like Spider's Bite and all the assassin weapons. Like there's so many like powerful card types that are playable and constructed that having these things that play really nicely in a limited format are great for the limited format, but they don't seem generally appropriately statted for constructed. And Betsy's really missing a power card. Like Bet Big is a lot weaker than the best cards of the other heroes. Like it's weaker than Crippling Crush. It's weaker than Test of Strength or Trounce and Victor. And because of that, I think Betsy's kind of like really bad compared to the other Guardians. But and her hero power is also like, it is designed for limited. I think it was good for the limited format, and unlimited Betsy was a lot better than Victor. You played Betsy much more often than Victor.
Right. And I guess something that's also getting glossed over here, I feel like, is you need a gold to sacrifice to activate Chapeau. And like that's not nothing, right? Like that gold could have been a resource. Like generating that gold is in and of itself a resource, a cost. So usually you're having to put other cards in your deck to generate this resource. So it just seems like you're telling me that this 3-block piece of temper equipment is really good, because if you generate this alternative resource, sometimes you can pay 2 resources to get 1 damage. And I'm just like, this juice just doesn't seem worth the squeeze to me.
So it's not just that you pay 2 resources to get 1 damage. It's that you play an attack. They don't like you just get to add an on hit to an attack. If you have a gold, you can turn your, like, if the gold just converts to a might and a vigor without the wager thing, that'd be great. If the hat just let you use a gold to spend 2 resources for +1 power, that's probably still better than sacrificing the gold to draw a card most of the time. And the fact that you're kind of getting both is nice. I think the gold generation that Betsy has access to is pretty bad.
Yeah, I was about to say, like, how are we making this gold to begin with?
Does Bet Big create a gold?
I think so, yes.
So that's probably how you're getting the gold most of the time, is you're betting big with wagering a might, vigor, and gold. I do think Betsy is in a very bad spot, and that's partly because her cards are so weak, but I don't think Chapeau is, like, compare Chapeau to Knucklehead. It's like way, way, way better, right? I think Chapeau is like,
no, Knucklehead gives you 6 intelligence. That's broken.
I think Chapeau is statted appropriately for Constructed, and if Betsy is a Constructed hero, I assume that she will have Chapeau in her deck most of the time.
Okay, that's fair. I still don't see it, but I feel less strongly about my opinion. So I'm more okay with my opinion being wrong here, if that's the case. Do you want to talk about the other headpiece that recently came out that I was wildly wrong on?
Was it Balance of Justice?
It was Balance of Justice. I thought this card was unplayable when it first came out, dude. I thought this card was so bad.
I remember your comments about it spawned a meme in our Wolfpack Discord, where you said it was just worse than Crown of Providence.
Because yeah, dude.
Crown of Providence, you get rid of a card to get a new card. And this one, your opponent has to draw 2 and then you get a new card. But you don't lose a card when you activate it to get a new card. It's just you get a free extra card. That's, if a card is worth 3 value on defense, then it's like a 5-block hat, which is great. And a lot of the time, an extra card can be worth more than 3 because you can use it on a turn where your hand's like pretty mopey, and the card that you draw can make your bad hand really good, similar to Crown of Providence filtering. Or you can use it to play a 6-card hand at your opponent where they draw their 2 cards, they hit you, you're like, okay, take 20, whatever. Here's my turn, 6-card hand, boom. And you're a hero that like gets a lot of value from playing additional cards in the same turn.
Yeah, I just didn't think there would be enough spots or decks on the meta to justify its cost. And I don't know that that will always be the case. But, you know, I'm happy to be wrong on something. You know, if I'm wrong, I'm willing to bite the bullet and say, you know what, I'm wrong on something. And you know what, I was wrong on Balance of Justice.
Yeah.
Card sweet. I like it.
Yeah, it's really strong. You get to use the 2-block whenever it's relevant to stop a break point, and then you can cash in for an extra card any turn your opponent draws 2, which happens a lot in the current Cloud's Constructed format. Dromai with Tome, KO with Blood Rush Bellows, and even sometimes you just like go like Wild Ride into Claw into Bear Fangs or something, and it turns on the hat.
Yeah, ninjas with Art of War.
Yeah, ninjas have Art of War. Even Prism has her special draw 2 angel.
Yeah, and Tome of Divinity if she's running that.
Yep. So there's just a lot of opportunities to cash the hat in for an extra card. And anytime your piece of equipment blocks 2 and gets you a card of value, that's a great deal. That's a great piece of equipment.
Yeah, that's fair. Well, I'm glad it's good. Do you think like it's the ceiling on what we'll see on generic headpieces then, or do you think they'll keep doing more powerful things in niche spaces overall?
So there's kind of an interesting situation with the generic hats where they want, like, I guess for a long time, the calling prizes have been hats, or a lot of their prize cards have been hats. We had Skullcap as the, I think it was a Battle Hardened prize with Skullcap, because it was a Battle Hardened prize when tunics were the calling prizes. But then they did Crown of Providence as the calling hat and Balance of Justice as the calling hat. So if they want to keep the trend of having the first place calling prizes be a legendary hat, they'll have to make a new hat. But it wouldn't surprise me if we just get like a really strong legendary shoes or gloves, since we're still missing those, that, and they make those the prize cards for callings.
I don't even remember what the name of the legendary arms are.
That's Vambrace of Determination, I believe.
Yeah, that's right, because we played it at Pro Tour Baltimore. That's right. It is Vambrace of Determination, but that card's not very good, especially now that Crown of Seas is banned in Classic Constructed.
Yeah. It's okay against Prism, I guess. Ward. Maybe the new Illusionist will be a Ward hero.
Yeah. How do you feel about Crown of Seas being banned out of Classic Constructed?
So, I think this is a piece of equipment that's people overrated for so long. I think it is good. It's probably one of the top 10 equipments in the game, but it's never actually generating you value on a numbers perspective, because you're trading one resource for one damage. That means a blue, if you're able to spend all three resources on defense, then you're getting 3 points of value out of by using the crown. It's really nice that it's flexible. It's nice that it lets you convert your arsenal into a blocking card on turns when you need to, especially if you can combine it with either tunic to not have to pitch a whole card to do it, or things that cost one or two resources on defense, like Rampart or the Ram's Head, or Brothers in Arms was very common, and Oasis Respite was also very commonly paired with Crown of Seeds.
And even Peace of Mind for like a hot minute before Olden rotated.
Yeah, and like yeah, the hard that's fatigue. True. There was like one of copies of Peace of Mind a lot of the time in the Oldheim decks that I forgot about.
Yeah, Staunch Response was also really common.
Yeah, Staunch. Yep. So I do think it was a powerful piece of equipment. It's interesting that they said that I think they said it limited like Earth Hero design in their article. I'm trying to remember exactly what they said, but a big part of why the Briar deck was able to go so fatiguey with these Crown of Seeds was that all of its generic 3-for-7 attacks and random 3-block attacks threatened to create an embodiment of Earth, which just let the Briar deck block very, very well. And when they were left with extra cards, they always had a meaningful on hit. Similar to Oldheim with Winter's Wail, the deck blocked very well, had Crown of Seeds, and then always had access to a meaningful on hit when your opponent left you with extra cards. Or I shouldn't say always for Oldheim, because sometimes you didn't have an ice card, but with Winter's Wail specifically, you had an ice card a lot of the time. You just frequently had access to a disruptive on hit. So that's kind of why it was so powerful in these Earth heroes, these defensive Earth heroes. They both blocked very well. And they both had on hits plus good blocking abilities. So
true. Yeah, they didn't say specifically. I guess like the gist of what they said is it is not beneficial for us to be forced to shape the future of Earth heroes around the existence of Crown of Seeds.
Yeah. The thing I'm most excited about this is when we saw the Berserk ban, it was like 2 weeks later, we saw the KO deck had a card that was going to break open the Berserk, was be broken with Berserk. So I think the thing that I'm most excited about is the fact that they're banning this and looking at this means they're probably working on a set with Earth heroes in it, or a Earth hero in it at least. And I am very much looking forward to getting to play some ice cards, and Earth probably means ice is coming back.
Yeah, there's not a single way to play the elemental heroes in Classic Constructed at the moment. They're all gone.
Yeah, all four of them living legended. And a lot of their cards are banned also, so.
Hypothermia. I guess it's not banned in Classic Constructed, but is Amulet of Ice unbanned now in Classic Constructed?
No, or I don't think it was suspended until Icelander leaves. I think they just banned it, because I believe you couldn't play it. No, Icelander Living Legend after Lexi. I don't think it got unbanned, but I'm not sure.
Following cards are banned in Classic Constructed: Awakening, Ball Lightning, Belittle, Berserk, Bloodsheath Skeletta, Chrono Seeds, Drone of Brutality, Duskblade, Plunder Run, Stabby Hammerers. So yeah, Amulet of Ice is free.
Back. It's free. We'll see. Maybe we'll get another Ice Wizard that can take advantage of it. That's a little bit weaker than Icelander was.
What are you doing for like the next week?
That's a very vague question. I am probably...
Let's cancel all of our plans for the next week and do this 100 game challenge or whatever of Duskblade is too good for Classic Constructed. Because I don't believe that it's too good for Classic Constructed. But apparently Brian Gottlieb says it's on podcasts and all this stuff too. If you say Duskblade's okay for Classic Constructed, you have to play 100 games of various matches into Duskblade Heroes. And you know what? I'm willing to bite that bullet, but do you want to take a whole week out of your life to test whether or not Duskblade is too good in Class Constructed?
No.
I'm shocked.
I do not. I got an Alpha Clash tournament coming up I'm trying to test for, you know?
So you're saying that the potential upside of having these results that nobody will even care about anyways is not worth it, as opposed to a tangible benefit to your life?
Yeah. I also think if I'm trying to break something, I'd also rather be testing sorcery stuff.
I have been having fun with sorcery.
Yeah.
Those Arthurian Legend cards, man. They're really cool.
Yeah, which ones are your favorite?
Let me tell you, right? But yeah, I don't get it. I think Duskblade would be fine. Maybe they think it might be too good in the future, but you know what? It doesn't even see play in Living Legend format. Whatever.
Is that true? Do none of the chain decks play it? They don't sideboard it or anything?
I don't know. Let me look at Michael Fung's first place. I when I was watching him play, he had Rosetta Thorn as his piece of equipment.
Oh, he was playing against Chains and Luxies, so I would play the aggro race card.
Yeah, is Living Legend going to get less hyper-aggressive and more fatigue-y anytime soon? I don't think so. So Duskblade's never seen play in that format.
We'll see, I guess. I don't know. But I do think that...
Yeah, no Duskblade in Michael's list.
Both Viscerai and Vinset are, right now, kind of struggling in Classic Constructed. Like, we saw a little bit of Viscerai at the Pro Tour, but not a lot. And
I saw too much Viscerai.
not a lot, and he didn't do particularly well. Vinset, I think we saw... zero, maybe one or two Vincents, but I didn't see any of them, at least. I don't know what was in the meta breakdown.
I think there was maybe one Vincent at the Pro Tour, but yeah, there were six. I know there were six Viscerai, because I am lamenting still to this day that I got paired into one of the six Viscerai. And of the six Viscerai, only like two or three of them were like not the OTK version. So like I got paired into a subset of a subset into a subset to be leveled on the, you know, I'm just the unluckiest person in the world, Michael, you know, it's fine.
Yeah, yep. The unluckiest person in the world. But I do think Duskblade is a card that is problematic if we're trying to play really long, non-disruptive mid-range numbers games. But I don't think that many decks should be trying to do that. And Runeblades are in a bad enough spot currently that I would not be upset if they were like, we're going to try unbanning it. And if there's problems, we'll just ban it again. Because it's never been legal in Classic Constructed, right? Ever?
No. It was the We Made a Mistake card.
Yeah. And then Warmonger's Diplomacy is very, very good against that card. You literally just lose all your counters and turn after they play Warmonger's Diplomacy, no matter what.
Yeah.
I don't know. I think it could be fine. I think if it does get unbanned, Warmongers might creep back up a little bit, but it also might creep back up a little bit after Brody won a calling with Azalea, who is also fairly vulnerable to Warmongers Diplomacy.
True. Yeah, very true.
I don't know. I suspect it would be fine. It might be one of the things where, like, what's the upside? Like, Drone of Brutality, it's probably not a problematic card. If it was legal, it probably wouldn't break anything. People probably wouldn't see much play. But what's the upside of unbanning it? It's either going to be bad or it's going to lead to some pretty unfun game states.
Fair. Okay. All right. I guess I don't feel that strongly about it, but just strongly enough to put a week of my time and life and energy into figuring out whether it's too good. I just care that much.
Maybe you'll find somebody else that'll play 100 games with you, but I'm not doing it. Mm.
That's why I need, if only Austin was a little bit older, I could do this testing with him. In a couple years, buddy, I'm going to have the ultimate testing buddy. I'm going to figure out whether or not Duskblade's too good.
You got to play your non-attack and then your attack. And then you attack with the sword and then you put a counter on it. And then you keep doing that and it'll get real big.
It'll be like, Dad, I want to go to the park. What are we doing here? I hate you. And I'll say, outside's for losers, Austin. You sit down and you play with your piece of cardboard like a big boy.
Wow.
No, I probably won't say that. Okay. So we got some combo equipment here. And then also on that ban list, there's a little card called Bloodsheath Skeletta. Do you think that card should be unbanned?
No, I do not. I think specifically in combination with X spells, both Sonatas are X spells now. I think the one that goes and searches your deck for an aura, they wouldn't be problematic with because that one's already discounted by having rune chance. But
sure,
the Sonata that reveals the top X cards Arcanics. Of your deck, X plus three, yeah, Arcanics. That card with Skeletta is
real good.
Yeah, really good. Because normally if a hero has 20 resources in Flesh and Blood, well, you can't spend 20 resources. Who can spend 20 resources? But this card just says you're going to deal a million arcane damage if you got 20 resources and draw like 10 cards.
Unless I cast it and then use Sonata for like 10, reveal your top 10 cards of your deck and draw like 2 cards. That was the most often way I was using Bloodsheath Skeletta, so I think it's perfectly reasonable. As long as you are the unluckiest person in the world like me, it's a fine card.
Well that's why you cut all the Diriax and added some more
I did. Abilities. Yeah, dude, I did all the math and it still didn't math right, so that's, you know, oh well.
Yeah. But basically combo equipment is equipment that maybe it has block value, maybe it doesn't, but it basically sits there until you're ready to do something that's basically bigger than some of its parts. So Sonata plus Bloodsheath Skeletta, for those of you that were not around, was a combo in Viscerai where you sat there building a bunch of rune chants, and then you sacked your Bloodsheath Skeletta to reduce the cost of your Sonata by an amount equal to the number of rune chants you have, which was usually 20 to 30. And because it was an X spell, you just got to sync all those resources, or you got to declare the cost of Sonata that you wanted to pay, which would be you want to spend 30 resources on it, or X equals 15 because it was an XX cost. And it was a really, really powerful combination that frequently resulted in the Viscerai either winning the game that turn or stripping the opponent's entire hand and putting them at an extremely low life total, which in combination with Rune Chance and Rosetta Thorn, it was really difficult to block out Viscerai when you got low like that.
True. So is Courage of Bladehold now like a combo piece of equipment, would you say?
Yeah, I think so. Even in Dorinthia, where it's like usually only paying for 2 or 3 sword swings, it's basically letting you save a card to do something stronger than the sum of its parts. In Dorinthia, you were frequently using it with Steel Blade Supremacy and or Glistening Steel Blade and or Twinning Blade to go 3 attacks wide with very meaningful on hits on all of them, and getting to keep basically your full 5 card hand plus having that paying for your sword swings leads to some really powerful turns that are bigger than you can normally get. And when you're playing a multiplier like Glistening Steel Blade or Steel Blade Supremacy, you're getting more than just the value of the one resource because all of your attacks are worth more, basically, if that makes sense. And then in Bolton specifically, you know, Bolton's got his old Lumina Ascension combination of cards where he charges and then he plays 2 or 3 Lumina Ascensions. And after sacking his Courage of Bladehold, he gets to attack 6 to 8 times with his swords without paying for them. And that's huge. That's so many attacks. Usually results in like 40 plus value point swing and often wins you the game on the spot.
Checks out. I have done that once or twice before in my life, I think.
You've triple lumined me. I double lumined me a million times.
Well, double lumina is easy. You sneeze.
I still get 6 swings. That's still getting 6 resources out of your chest, which is That's a combo.
Sure. So would you say that Breeze Rider boots are a combo piece of equipment?
Because they sacrifice to give your combo cards go again. Mm-hmm. They can be, because if you're giving go again to multiple attacks, I would say that you're getting some good value out of it. It leads to the 30 damage Katsu turns where they play like three Bonds of Ancestry, where they go like Bonds Whelming, Dishonor or something. Or I missed the Bonds in there. But yeah, you can definitely use it to combo, use them to combo. They can also just be like kind of like Snapdragon Scalers, where you're just converting them to get one extra action point, which is not using them for their highest possible point. But that's one of the strong parts about a lot of these combo equipment, is you can just use them for kind of their, I don't want to say their intended value, but kind of like a lower
value. Mopier value, yeah.
Yeah.
Break in case of emergency.
Yeah.
So jumping all the way back, we talked about how there's the blocking equipment, combo equipment, and resource equipment. And then basically, specifically chest pieces are supposed to be the piece of equipment that generate resources. And then arms are supposed to generate like damage valuations. But I just had a thought that then Runeblade equipment that generate rune chance breaks that dynamic, since there are so many cards that are reduced by cost because of rune chance. So then their arms that create rune chance, specifically Grasp of the Arcanite, functions as like a resource generating card, which is, I guess I never really even thought about it like that before.
Yeah, I think you can kind of look at it like that, but rune chance at their core, like, yes, there's a lot of cards that synergize, but they are just one arcane damage. And I think it's similar to like how might tokens are an arms thing, and arms make might is damage, but you look at Prime Defy, it's a card that costs less, or no, I guess it just gets more damage if you get a might token.
Yeah, it's bigger, that reduces the cost. Yeah.
Yeah. Oh, well, I don't know where I was going with that.
It's okay. So yeah, it's just a little interesting thing that popped in my head. And for a long time, we said Grasp of the Arcanite was like the best equipment, if not one of the best pieces of equipment in the game. Do you still think that's true? And it's just the supporting pieces around Runeblade? Or do you think power creep has kind of caught up with the times with good old Grasp?
Yeah, I actually think it's just a power creep situation where it was one of the best equipment in the game. And a big part of that was there just wasn't another arms that's like remotely comparable to how good Grasp of the Arcanite was. It was a 3-block that also let you convert excess resources into more damage, which is really, really strong. It let you filter on turn 0. Just was worth more than 3 value per game on an arm slot. And there is, I don't think there was another arms in the game that could do that. I think in that same conversation, I think Scavs' Others was one of the best equipments in the game, because it's a boot that boots that blocked 3, and it's worth more than 3 points of value because if you have this roll ability that is worth something, you know. But now we have other arms. We have Apex Bonebreaker, I think, might be the best arms in the game now, where they're usually getting 5 points of value off of them.
I think there might be an argument for Courage of Bladehold or Iron Song versus maybe
Courage of Bladehold's the chest. It's a Braceforge Bracers.
Braceforge Bracers, yeah, yep. Yeah, thank you.
I think Braceforge Bracers and Iron Song versus both require you to hit to get a value, but they spend one resource for 1 point of value, and a lot of the time in Warrior you're just going to have an extra resource lying around because you have a lot of 1 cost and 2 cost in Warrior. Maybe not a lot of 2 costs, but.
And specifically, like, the filtering off of Iron Song versus isn't nothing either. There's a lot of ways that you can start setting up pitch stacks or certain things in like combo situations in Bolton specifically that are really nice, that are enabled by Iron Song versus. So that's an element to it too as well.
Yeah, I think it is fair to say that it's worth three plus some in the same way Grasp is worth 3 plus some, but it's not like you can't just like assign a flat value to it, because it's like contextual on your hands, how many times it comes up that you can't convert your extra resource into something.
So Scowling Fleshbag, we said we'd come back to it, talking about Scowling Fleshbag.
Yeah, so Scowling Fleshbag's in an interesting spot where it's the only disruptive equipment in Legal and Classic Constructed right now. Stalagmite's the only other one that has been legal that I know of, at least. There are some equipment that can be disruptive when paired with specific other cards. For example, Halo of Illumination paired with Prism's hero power can go get you a Figment of Triumph that reduces your opponent's attacks by one, and that is disruption. But it doesn't actually, like, I wouldn't attribute that disruption to the equipment. I would attribute it to the hero or the cards played with the equipment. Whereas Scowling Fleshback, you just play it, or you just block with it, and it intimidates your opponent. And it's basically, it and Slagmite are equipment that on their own aren't worth a ton, but if you can line up your disruption in a way that makes it so your opponent can't spend their hand in a way that they would have been able to, you can basically take away a lot of value from them. I think the most common thing that I'm looking for in KO mirrors is if my opponent has one resource and two cards in hand when they're attacking me with something with Goigan, if you Scowling Fleshback them and they don't have a way to generate extra resources like a Tunic Counter or Heart and Cross Trap, there's basically no card left in the deck that if they're left over with Scowling Fleshback, they'll be able to attack with. And so if you intimidate one of their cards, they're almost certainly going to waste their action point, waste their one floating resource, arsenal a card, and take an intellect penalty of one because they only get to draw three cards. Sometimes they can discard a windup, I guess. That's probably the best case scenario for them, but they're still wasting their action point and wasting their one floating resource.
Yeah, and they're only getting one value out of that because they probably discarded from somewhere else on the turn cycle prior to that.
Yeah, maybe they're getting two value, but even then, even still, it's
not good.
Yeah, really good when you do that.
Okay. Yeah, so Scowling Fleshback is part of the reason why I wanted to go hybrid as well. I think the matchup's fine for Sabres, but I think things can kind of go sideways on you a little bit easier, and you just have to play the game a little bit differently. But the problem with Scowling Fleshback when you're playing Sabres is that you have a big sign on your forehead that says, use Fleshback now because I have a combo. I just shrugged and said no blocks and took a bunch of damage on your previous turn cycle. It is now the correct time for you to use Scowling Fleshback to get a lot of value out of my hand. Or you have to just like be like, oh, well, I hope they don't get the card. Like you have could have like a combo piece and just some other random card, and you're like, I hope I take win my 50-50 coin flip to win the game here, and that's not really fun. So what I like about Raiden is that when you play Raiden, there's lots of times where it's just like, oh, what do you have, one card left in your hand, okay, no blocks, and you're like, okay, well, now my last card was a Lumina Ascension, Raiden swing, and you could have gotten a lot of value had you known that the last card in my hand was Lumina Ascension. But since it's a lot more disguised and there's a lot more nuance to the game plan and what we're doing, it just is a lot harder. Like there's been games against brute opponents where they don't even use Scowling Fleshback until they're sub like 15 health. And at that point, they're just using it to stay alive just because there wasn't an obvious spot to use it before then in the game. So
yeah, that's definitely one of the strengths of Raiden, is it's really hard to know when you're supposed to Scowling Fleshback them. I think the most obvious one is when you play a Via the Vanguard and charge one or two cards. You're like, oh, every card is worth more. This is a good turn to Scowling Fleshback.
True, yeah.
But other than that, there's just like no clear signs that it's like you should Scowling.
And even then, I have an interesting decision then as well, because if I want to, I can just charge that extra card and not allow you to get the extra value, and then I just have the extra card. Like if I know I'm going to have a card left over, or it's not a card I particularly want to arsenal, as long as it's a light card, I can just tuck it and just get my 2 points of damage anyways out of it. So
2 points of damage and a card and soul for later.
Yeah.
I do think with your Lumina Ascension example earlier, if you don't have any floating resources and you just like attack with, let's say you attack with, I don't know.
Engulfing Light or Classic.
Yeah, sure. Engulfing Light, and it's pumped up because you had a Courage or something. I don't know. Or has Go Again because
Agility token, yeah.
I think it being pumped up is more relevant than it having Go Again. But if it's already pumped up, so you can give it Go Again, and you have one card in hand, and I use Scowling Fleshback, or like KO uses Scowling Fleshback, then you're just like, okay, I won't give it Go Again, I'll just save the card in my soul, and then you get Arsenal the Lumina Ascension and do it later.
Yeah. So. And sometimes you have Spirit of Irenia in play, and Scowling Fleshback doesn't even do anything anyway, so.
Yeah.
So, cool.
Spirit is very good against Scowling Fleshback. That also came up testing against Zach's Viscerite deck, where I would try to Scowling Fleshback him and he'd creepers his non-attack in.
Oh yeah. Like, that's cute.
instance Grigoni against Fleshbag.
Okay. Any other equipment dynamics you want to talk about?
Gosh, I think there's a lot of interesting things to dive in on equipment, and we covered a lot of it, but I feel like we could talk about equipment for like,
yeah, we scratched like the surface. Hours. We could probably just spend the next 2 or 3 hours discussing, like, that's why I was like, we can't do an equipment tier list because we'd be here for like 3 hours at this point. There's just so much equipment in the game, and some of it is like contextual as well. So yeah.
I think like spending a lot of time figuring out how to maximize the value of your equipment is a huge way to get like a lot of equity in games. Like equipment swings things so much. The difference between blocking with a Scowling Fleshbag for 2 when you're about to die, or for 2 and intimidating a very relevant card and making your opponent either intellect penalty or have a significantly weaker turn, that's huge. I know talking to Michael Fung, his camera match that he played against Akatsu, he lost. He looked back at that game and he's like, I think I Scowling Fleshbagged in the wrong time. And I actually, watching it, I'm not sure if I agree with that, but I know that was like one of his takeaways. And like, if you use it, use your equipment at the right time and it lines up. Sorry, if you use your equipment at the right time, that's like a ton of equity. And if you're losing games, definitely look back at how you're using your equipment and see if there's any way you could have gotten more value out of it if you used it at a different time.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think they're the most skill testing cards in Flesh and Blood, since they're just always there. You start the game with them in play, and knowing what time to use them, sometimes it's correct to just like block on like turn 0 or turn 1 even with your equipment, and sometimes it's right to never block with your equipment basically at all until you're at sub 10 life or whatever. It's the very end of the end game. It's dependent on matchup, what your plan is, what you're using that equipment for in the matchup. There's just so much nuance to that like evaluation that it's hard to cover it all in just 1 hour. So, but I'm glad we did talk about what we did and covered the pieces of equipment that we did. But I guess with that being said, the next time you're rolling your Scapskin Leathers, sure, we already do Scapskin Leathers sign off. Do we do a Scapskin Leathers sign off?
I think that was in the episode that we didn't air, because I talked about Scapskins for like 10 minutes in that one.
Just be safe, I'll mix it up. The next time you're getting intimidated by Scowling Fleshbag, always remember, mind your manners.